Alrighty. What's going on? What's up? What's up, podcast fans, family? So, it is the Power of Human Fiction podcast, and we are doing a What's Up Wednesday. You know, we roll these out every once in a while. And this is a special What's Up Wednesday because we get to check in with friend of the show, Ann Beam, for her 3-year check-in of Emerald Comics Distro.
I still exist.
Yes. And it's so exciting. So typically, as we do with our What's Up Wednesdays, I would toss the ball to my illustrious co-host, and he will get us rolling with any kind of first burning question that he has. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, the first burning question is likely the obvious question. How are you holding up in this post-COVID world?
Well, actually decently well. In terms of baseline sanity and in terms of my business still existing. I'll get into a little bit about like how did my business survive? But in terms of my own survival, it's been like a lot of cooking and a lot of being like really gentle with myself, and also Discord, new to my life. The most delightful like Discord server that I'm on, and I joined several, some that are just like my local friends, but also one that's part of Xingyin Core's Patreon, which is a very gentle, delightful server that has topics like, what are you cooking? What are you making? Good rocks. With a very broad definition of what a rock is, because it's also like your pets and this thing I found and all kinds of things. They also, they're a delightful indie cartoonist. If you're not familiar, they do like gentle D&D, I would say, is one way to describe them. Part of this Discord is running a physical male base, I guess it's a LARP, called Space Gnomes Space, I guess. Basically, people get postcards, a little bit of world building, and then you pretend to be gnomes who just kind of like have normal jobs for, you know, being space gnomes, and then you write each other postcards. It's amazing.
Well, oh, wow. Up in the post office, doing their part while having
Heck
fun
yes.
And being space gnomes.
Yep. So that's like personal survival. In terms of like business survival, here's how my last 6 months have been. In February, I went to Comics Pro, which is an event that in the before times happened yearly, and is a trade show for the comic book industry, meaning like it's not a Comic-Con. It's a place where publishers, retailers, and like comics industry people that serve the industry in some way, like people that have programs and apps that are useful, or me, a distributor, all gather up and the core of the conference are these round tables, which is sort of like speed dating, where an entity like, for example, Emerald Comics Distro sits down at a table with like a bunch of samples out or other display stuff, and then people rotate around every 8 minutes. So you like have 8 minutes to pitch your business to comic shop owners from all over the country. And technically all over the world, because there were like a half a dozen Brits and Australians there as well.
Okay.
So that was great. And, you know, regardless of the fact that we are now in Plaguelands, still got me a lot of really wonderful industry contacts. And in general, like, it was exhausting and my work was well received in terms of like people are interested in what I am distributing. Hooray. And I have gotten a couple of wholesale clients from it, even during pandemic times, which is also great. Obviously, the greatness of it was a little bit diminished by the next month, plague proper hitting, ECCC being canceled, realizing over the course of about a month that like all of the cons are canceled, and also all of the retailers are just trying to hold on and don't really want to talk to me or really get anything that is not absolutely essential in their shop for the next, you know, X amount of time. So it's also complicated by the fact that there was a COVID outbreak at the Diamond Warehouse. So for a while, shops weren't getting their regular Wednesday comics.
Right.
And like, part of me is like, oh no, why didn't I jump on that super hard and like really aggressively promote myself during that time, because people needed any kind of content and that could have been a thing. At this point, I have forgiven myself for not, because like, I think it was early April, maybe? I don't know. I was still in shock, honestly, and like kind of going through my stages of grief for the before times, and hadn't fully, like, I don't even think I have fully pivoted yet, but I am starting to pivot. So there we go. What was really helpful, especially in the second quarter of the year, I charge the small presses and individual cartoonists that I work with a monthly service fee to pay for my time of monitoring their stuff in shops and doing sales meetings and all of my runaround, because I my local wholesale stuff, I don't really make money off of what I sell. I make money off of service fees. My online orders, I do take a cut and make a little bit of money off of what I sell. So I kept the online shop going for 3 months, but like didn't take service fees, because I'm like, I'm not leaving the house. There is, you could, you know, use the little bit of, less hassle and expense. So, kind of wrote off quarter two. The good news is, because I don't have a storefront or like vast amounts of warehousing, I have a little bit of warehousing, but it's not a ton. So my overhead is quite low. So I, you know, I didn't have to go into debt to survive for 3 months without income. It just meant that I didn't have income for the business.
Right.
A little awkward, but not business ending. And then in the last, I guess, 2 months, I have started charging service fees again and started checking in with shops again. Most of my local Puget Sound and Portland comic shops made it through. Sadly, not all of them made it through. I was very sad that a long-standing Seattle shop, Comics Dungeon, I'm not sure exactly how long it had been in Wallingford, but like 30 years maybe, that had a cool nonprofit attached to it that like got books into schools. The owner like had a double whammy of his dad died of COVID and then he had to shut down his business.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, man.
So that sucked a lot. And there was also a second affiliated shop that also closed down. So two of my wholesale outlets and also just two like community hubs. So that was sad and did not help with like my general feelings of motivation and wanting to hustle. But the summer's so funny. Like, me as a human being just existing in the world, I normally have some degree of summer seasonal depression because bodies were a mistake. I don't know. but this year I'm like, okay, I can't tell what's normal and being summer seasonal depression where I just get really slow and like put food in the Instant Pot because I don't actually want to cook, which is normally one of my like big self-care things is cooking. And how much of this is like COVID sadness, and then how much of this is my industry is on the rocks sadness. Can't tell. and how much of this is like the country is teetering on the precipice of fascism / sliding ever further down the fascist slope. That's also, you know, it's hard to tease out the threads. And I'm not sure how much it actually matters, like why I am having a hard time in any given moment. But I do enjoy, like, knowing the origins of things. I find helpful. Anyway, I it's been nice to start to check back in with shops and start to ramp up, like, what I'm actually doing again a little bit. I have gotten a couple of new products in from existing clients because the project that's taken 4 months longer than it should have is me, like, rewriting my contracts and preparing to take on a whole bunch of more clients. Because I have quite a few really super rad people who've been waiting in the wings. Finally, my contract's off, being reviewed by a lawyer. We're making it. Anyway, new products. I have it in stock and can distribute it on a wholesale and retail basis. Have the second volume of Guan, which I really appreciated y'all's interview with Jerome Wolford about that on a previous What's Up Wednesday. And then I have gotten an extremely, like, cool risograph zine from a couple of my clients that are working together. Basically, it was supposed to be their cool zine for cons, but no, it's a cool zine for online shops. It's called Monstrous Love, and it is romantic tales involving monsters, a perennial favorite from Iris J., Nero O'Reilly, and Corey Bing. And then I also have volume 3 now of this fun series by Fortuna Media called Almost Real, which, if you'll recall, zoo books, like, big format, lots of animal facts, sometimes diagrams of animals. Imagine that, but for cryptids. It's Almost Real, a journal of speculative biology, which is super fun. It's a lot of really talented illustrators doing cool biological diagrams of completely made up critters. The first volume was kind of general. The second volume was like creatures that fly, and then this newest volume is aquatic critters. So it's a fun time for all ages. Hooray!
Oh wow, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I'm super glad that the Guan Volume 2 connection worked out. That was awesome. It was like friends making friends.
Later in the fall, I will have the newest one from, I will have restocks from, and the newest one from Power and Magic Press out of Portland. Right. And their newest anthology would be right down y'all's alley. It's called Mañana, Latinx Comics from the 25th Century.
I just backed that on Kickstarter.
Yeah. It's going to be so good.
Yeah. I didn't get to back it, so I'm glad that it'll be, you know, a thing that I can pick up, like, on a storefront virtually.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. I'm excited to get this also the second volume of their Power and Magic series, which is short stories that are witchy. I don't think they're specifically on a theme, but they are by all people of color. And Jomet Gill, the editor of Power Magic Press, is just a world-class editor. Like, really good sense of themes and timing, and, like, makes a really good visual mixtape.
Dope.
Awesome. Now, first thing that I wanted to comment on is I love that you're using before times. It's just a great framing word, and it makes me feel like we're in the years of yore, you know, and like it's like Arthurian kind of Camelot.
Right. Like, I had to do a serious mindset shift to be like, no. This thing that we're in, this is a whole new era. This is going to last for a while.
Yeah. And so the second thing is I I'm glad that you were able to walk us through the highs and lows and still be able to end up on being decently okay. I think from certain other podcasts and interviews that I've been consuming throughout this whole thing, there's been this constant vulnerability that the interviewees would say, like, sometimes they feel weird answering the question that their business or that their professional career is still doing well, since so many people aren't doing that well. So it's sort of like this, you feel guilty that you're still advancing or succeeding or even just maintaining.
Yeah, there's been some definite survivor's guilt during all of this. Although I have felt that more on, I don't know, a personal level, I guess, than the business level. Just because I see a lot of folks having a vastly harder time for a variety of reasons than I am. And that's mostly like privilege and circumstance. But I've been doing my best to like leverage my privilege and circumstance as best I can.
So in those 3 months where you were kind of in a down and working on contracts, did you give yourself any time to just recover mentally any way you needed to recover? Or
honestly, for the like for quarter two, I wasn't even working on contracts. I was like staring into the void and figuring out like how to reorder my life in terms of like how to connect with humans again, in what that was going to look like now that we're in the now times. And I have found that throughout the pandemic, like work has just been slower. I think one of the biggest pieces of personal work that I've been doing over the last 6 months is like wrestling my brain into it, like doing stuff again. I wonder if I either have ADHD or some kind of executive dysfunction thing going on. But in any case, I have been like using techniques aimed at folks with ADHD to like project manage myself, and it's been pretty effective. Something that's going to sound really goofy, but is actually pretty profound, is I cleaned my office. sounds goofy, but what that means is like I have a workflow so that my office doesn't become a pile of boxes, and or like sad piles of paper every like month, or rather, it, you know, it would stay sort of tidy for a few weeks and then sort of turn into a place that I would increasingly physically avoid by, for example, doing all my emails at the coffee shop. Pandemic has, you know, like so many of us, it's like, well, what are your issues? You must deal with them now because they're inescapable. and everything's turned up to 11 in your own brain and in your relationships. Ooh, pandemic times. But one of the things has been like, okay, no, I actually have to figure out how my brain wants to start and stop tasks and what kind of help it needs to do that. And then how I'm managing the like my physical space. But I feel pretty successful in that. Hopefully that trend continues into the winter.
Were you forgiven of yourself as you like figured that out? Were there some days where you were staring at the wall and just been like, oh, it's okay, today's a stare at the wall day? Or were you like, I should, okay, great.
I've been like working real hard this past on it. Honestly, this was a thing I was blessedly like working on pre-pandemic, was being gentle with myself. I had realized in therapy that one of my like core beliefs was, if I am not hard on myself, something terrible will happen. My brain didn't have like a specific terrible thing that was going to happen. It was just like this urge born out of who knows what. So as an antidote, I have been saying to myself, if I am gentle with myself, something wonderful will happen, because it's also irrational, but it's moving the opposite direction of irrational. So I'm like, hey, here's a counterspell. So I've been practicing a lot of like self-compassion and regardless, like, okay, so I didn't do stuff. I can not have done stuff and beat myself up about it, or I can like just not have done stuff and then... but so I was working on that pre-pandemic, and that's definitely something that I've been practicing a lot. So many opportunities for practice during pandemic.
Dope. That's awesome. That whole being gentle with yourself and being fine with if it's a stare at the wall day reminded me of the Lucy Bellwood demon dialogues and how you need to manage and maintain and, you know, I guess not, don't avoid the dialogue, embrace it, and then turn it into something positive. So that's really cool that you're doing that.
I want to, because you brought up Lucy Bellwood, I want to shout out her most recent project, which is delightful and fascinating. It's called The Right Number. And it's a voicemail box that has a rotating prompt every 2 weeks. And it's been stuff that's like, I would say, not necessarily thematically demon dialogues-y, but like sort of on that level, stuff like what's something you wish you could say to another person, or what's something you wish someone would say to you, that sort of thing. And it's interesting to me because it's not like it goes anywhere or is publicly shared in any capacity. It's just like kind of this weird confessional to nowhere. It feels a little bit like post-secret in that way. So it's been interesting so far. It's only like a little over a month old, but worth looking up. It's all over Lucy's it has its own website, but it's all over Lucy's socials. And I'll make sure I drop a link to y'all, but The Right Number. It's interesting.
Very cool. She always has these just off the beaten path, wildly interesting perspectives and projects. So definitely going to have to check that one out. I like it.
This is bouncing my brain into one other project that I wanted to shout out, because I think it's really just perfect for the times. Slightly pre-pandemic, I was very excited to get my friend Kat Velos's book, which is a book about adult friendship and why it's hard. Hmm. And it's called We Should Get Together, which was definitely a case of like once pandemic hit, Kat was like, oh, let's pivot. I believe she released a follow-up to it that's specifically about digital stuff. But the other thing that she did is she has a something called Connection Club. And the thought is it's a Zoom meeting that it's like you pay a little bit of a monthly fee. It's a Zoom meeting that you show up to. Everybody turns their camera off. She DJs. And everyone like writes the letters that you've been meaning to write to other people to connect with them. And I love that she's creating a container for it. She's a UX designer and like a facilitator. And she was my roommate when we served together in AmeriCorps. So like even the premise of her book, We Should Get Together, which is like adult friendship has a UX problem, could sound incredibly pretentious and awful if it was coming from like a cishet Silicon Valley guy, but it's not. It's coming from Kat, who is queer and Black and just has so much experience talking to such a wide variety of people about real things she's the perfect person to like make this argument in a sustained way. So Connection Club is I just signed up for September. It was filled up for August, but I'm going to have a go at that this week.
Oh, fantastic. See, the Connection Club thing and what you just mentioned with We Should Get Together was dovetails right into my question of, as you mentioned, you were in these Discord group chats and you're working on being gentler with yourself and you're in these communities that are being gentle with each other. So I was just curious, what do you imagine moving forward into, you know, this now times that we're in, these communities, how will they continue to mutate and morph and evolve to meet the needs of the members?
That's a good question. I'm thinking about a couple of different things. One is part of the historic purpose of comic shops has been to be a community hub. And in some ways, I still see comic shops functioning as a community hub, but it's difficult when you don't have the physical container so much. So I'm curious to see, and I don't know how that will shift or not as pandemic times go on, if we'll, you know, start to have limited in-person stuff again, or if simply being a place where you can come and pick up your pull box or come and, you know, buy a board game and chat with the, you know, staff that you know and who are sort of a community hub. You know, it's like your bartender, your barista, your comic shop human. I'm like, is that going to be what comic shops look like for a while, or will something shift? Will it look different? Will, you know, nationwide, will we just sort of give up on in-person retail? Like, that's a possibility. And if so, then there's going to have to be a shift in what comics and media community look like. I mean, for me personally, the shift has been like, oh, Discord is a thing now. Like, I'm on a lot more Patreons than I was before because I want to tangibly support artists. And also it's a way for me to feel connected with their work when I'm not necessarily going to see them at a show or anything like that. I can't say. I definitely think that the core of, you know, whatever community, be it nerd community or role-playing game community or comics community, will always be there in some capacity. And I do have some hope that even as we have to be more distanced or come up with, like, innovative ways to function, that, like, it can be a positive thing. Like, we can come up with positive alternatives. And stuff like Connection Club, like, gives me a lot of hope. I could imagine a sort of terrible, everyone gets off into incredibly insular subreddits and then just, like, ignores each other forever. But I don't think that's how it's going to go.
Right. Knock on wood that does not go that way.
Right.
But yeah.
Could we not?
Yeah. But I do agree with you that I don't imagine it will head that direction. I do hope that as we find whatever balance that's going to come after this, we have, I'll say, imaginative and innovative comic shop owners, staffers, whatever, to create, if it has to be a virtual community at times and then an in-person community with physical distancing. I'm hopeful that there's a balance and there's some kind of situation that'll be struck that can still promote diverse conversation and good debates and just general fanning for an awesome topic or property or story.
Yeah. I think that is a force that goes beyond capitalism. At least I would like to hope so. Although, oh boy, comic shop capitalism is having a hard time right now. I don't know how to. I'm sort of pleased that the large scale comics distribution has cracked and shattered a little bit, DC Comics defected and from Diamond, the big distributor, and like they're like, we'll make our own distributor, which was sort of based out of, I believe it's based out of Midtown Comics in New York, which I'm like, yep. Okay, it makes a ton of sense that it would be based off of a comic shop. On the other hand, there's been a lot of high drama, which I have not paid super close attention to because, frankly, I know that has to do with they had a retailer Facebook board or group or something that they disbanded, and people are feeling excluded, and there's a lot of hoorah in the background. And I can't say I'm hugely surprised. I think that it's interesting that Diamond was a de facto monopoly for so long. I don't know if this is necessarily going to help, but I have, just in my occasional chit-chats with store owners over the past couple of months, a lot of them are like, oh yeah, now we have a Penguin Random House account that we didn't have before. or like, well, since we're already having to mess with multiple distributors, I'll go ahead and add these other things that we didn't bother with before. So who knows?
With all of that going on, how has that changed your roadmap for what you see Emerald Comics Distro doing in the future?
I mean, I think that wholesaling is still a good use of my time. This was not necessarily new for the pandemic, but I definitely need to step up my marketing game so that people know, you know, what I have and how to buy it.
We understand.
Yes. Oh, marketing. There have been some cool, like, innovative marketing things, though, that I've been paying attention to throughout the pandemic. Jen Vaughn, who's a local Seattle cartoonist, did a really cool thing during Emerald City Comic Con, and I believe she's planning another one called the Very, Very Shopping Network. She streams on a Twitch channel called Very, Very Spaceship, and the Very, Very Shopping Network was like this sweet, like, late night shopping channel style thing, but with the conceit that like it's on a spaceship and all these people are like warping in, and it was all indie comics and Artist Alley folks from Emerald City. So who knows, maybe we'll see more of that.
Sounds dope. And then with everything being turned up to 11, is there anything business wise that you thought you could leave on the back burner that when turned up to 11, you decided you need to address sooner?
I mean, there was a lot of stuff that I had left on the back burner that I ended up leaving on the back burner for, you know, the 3 months of void staring. And, you know, part of me is like, man, I wish that I could have done the contract during the void staring, but I didn't. I wish I could have, like, done some returns that I needed to do, but I didn't. However, I feel like the theme of the past month or so has been doing the tasks that take like half an hour, but I've been putting off for 6 months. So that's felt empowering. Yeah, honestly, I'm still in the point of like noticing and making plans for all of the stuff that I'm like, oh, that is not only on the back burner, but at this point boiling over. you know, I on the one hand, the pandemic was sort of like that wish fulfillment thing that I personally had when I was in school and very stressed out of like, well, what if it snowed really bad and it was just like snow day for a week and then I could like catch up on my stuff. I was like, well, that kind of happened, but it's complicated.
Right.
And you didn't catch up on your stuff. You stared into the void and now the stuff's still there. And now we instead need to catch up with our brain, or at least I do, and figure out how to start doing stuff. So, a lot of stuff has been turned up to 11 to succinctly answer your question.
So I had an idea of, because I don't know if we have anything else with the capitalism of comics. I know you and I had brief conversations about it, and you're a bit more into that realm of the world than I am. Wasn't sure if you had anything else there that you wanted to ask Anne about, well, you know, with Diamond losing that stranglehold that it has.
Oh, no. We read that article, what, like 3 years ago where Anne was going to come in and take down Diamond single-handedly?
Yeah.
It worked. My clever plan. It wouldn't.
Yeah, we all know this was Anne's work.
Yes.
General patient. Business question, because something I noticed, you don't just, in this conversation, you don't just pay attention to the books that you're currently distributing, but you seem to follow the creators whose work you're distributing and know what they have coming up. Do you actively do that? Is it a bit of a give and take?
It's a bit of a give and take. Thankfully, the way that I have my business social media curated is pretty limited. It's a lot of like media outlets and my creators, so it's relatively easy for me to parse. And I appreciate having my business social media really compartmentalized. Some of it's probably like some of my creators, I am also their patrons, which maybe is like a conflict of interest, but also I like them and were their patrons in some cases before they were my clients. And it is easier to keep up with the people that I follow on Patreon specifically.
Right.
That being said, I think it was totally scattershot from about March to about June. And then I got a little intentional about it in July. Also, I mean, some of my creators are very good about like emailing me their upcoming projects and Kickstarters and things, which is hugely helpful.
Yeah. I just noticed you also keep a lot of them in your head, which I find impressive as well.
Yeah. I would say that is my strength as like an in-person Willy Loman sales agent, is that I do keep my entire catalog in my head, and I can give a pitch and a cover price for the 200 or so items that I represent.
Wow.
That being said, stock take is still hard and a pain in my butt.
With 200 titles in your head, do you feel like that's more or less hustle than when you were just getting started?
I think whatever that memory mechanism is almost like it's just a dump stat. Like, I don't, it's, back when I was teaching, I used to teach, in classrooms, mostly like tiny children, but I could pick up a classroom full of names in like a day when I was teaching. Can't do it anymore because like, I think I've reallocated that memory stat to like know your whole catalog and all of the cover prices and who made them and where they're from. It also helps that like I only have about 80 clients. So it's like, if I'm building the memory palace that is my catalog, it's easier because I don't have 200 clients. I have 80 clients, 200 items.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's you can like group and pair off things. Definitely.
It's whatever. It's like I do think I can only have one memory intensive function like that at a time. Like, I don't think I could teach, remember all the kids' names and do this and remember all the titles and be a barista and remember all the regulars' orders. But it's that same function.
Gotcha. Okay. So now, Lou.
Yep.
Any more business questions, or do we want to slide into the fandom piece that we like to do when we chat with Anne?
We can slide.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. All right, so well, let's see. What do we want to hit first? Obviously, we've got the Netflix phenomenon of Last Airbender, the animated, and then we've got Legend of Korra on there. We got Steven Universe, a tried and true fun thing.
I was appreciating the, and I had it up on a tab here, and I don't know where it went, but you had a little, not study guide, but like some questions to think about while watching Legend of Korra. Like how the legacy of the Avatar Last Airbender characters is upheld or challenged. Stuff like that. That was pretty interesting.
Oh yes, yes. So within our own comic books group chat, we're doing a Legend of Korra, you know, pilgrimage, and as the conversations have gone back and forth, you know, throughout the seasons and episodes, Lou suggested, hey, for the Legend of Korra trivia night that we're having on the 18th of September, why don't we just create a bit of a, these are the things that you should probably look for to prep for the trivia night. Yeah, it's basically a study guide in a sense to make sure that folks can, you know, really intently watch and think about certain things that we'll probably ask and how they can, you know, just figure it out. So yeah, that's one of the legacy of Team Aang and how they are. Yeah, you know, how they're celebrated and challenged will be a piece of it. And everything else, you know, framing, pacing, all that stuff is really important. So, yeah, we thought it'll be a cool thing for people to pick up on and potentially watch a little bit how we watch and see if they get anything different from the story by watching that way.
Yeah, I appreciate the framing a lot. My media habits during the pandemic have been a combination of like feel good and or children's and or YA things, which I would, you know, say Avatar and Korra fall roughly under that category because the other category is like podcasts about cults and like weighty nonfiction. It's frankly nice to have the balance, but I brought that up because just to be a huge nerd, one of the ways I've been selecting books, and shout out to Libby, the library app, because I've been doing a lot of ebooks, a lot of audiobooks off of that. I've been working my way through the books that Luke Cage has in his house in the Marvel TV show. I think it's somewhere, there's a list of these, and I was a nerd when I watched it and like wrote down the list, and I'd read a couple of like the like fun 60s detective novels a couple of years back, but I'm getting into the nonfiction now. But I bring that up just to say, like, having some kind of a framing device to engage with some literature is, like, really helpful.
Yeah, we've been trying to find a way on our end because since we interact with creators a lot on our podcast, and a thing we used to do in our legacy podcast was just, like, take time and break something down, we've been trying to find a way to bring that to our listeners and... Yeah, I think the question thing is a cool way where it's like, these are things we think about when we watch something. What are you guys thinking about? And then Korra specifically, I just, you'll find all types of splintering opinions on the interwebs and on Twitter. But the one I particularly liked about Korra is people who realized they never really gave Korra a shake because they went in on the Aang again, and they're like, they're watching this again. They're like, oh, this is cool and different.
Yeah. It is a really different show, but I love how it takes everything that was happening, you know, a couple of generations ago and makes it complicated because that's how the world works.
Yeah, they just do a lot of really cool things with that. It's a lot more gray than the original series.
Yeah. I like that a lot because, you know, I mean, somebody on Twitter was like, yeah, I turned on Korra because I needed some like feel good stuff. But then I realized it was about police brutality and a tyrannical system of government. It's like, well, yeah, but it always is more complicated than like good guy, bad guy punching.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think the other thing that needs to be mentioned about Korra is I think you had to age with it. I know that when I watched it, I mean, even though I was like a young adult, I was still like younger. So certain things just didn't really click for me in terms of appreciating it. And when I watched it now, you know, many years older, or I guess like 4 or 6 years older, I was like, wow, you know, this is like a more adult story than Aang's story. And it makes sense to be more adult. Korra herself is older. Also, just the entire world has evolved. And I appreciate it even more, even kind of the romance. I don't know. I don't want to say it's a love triangle, whatever that love rhombus was that was going on. Like, even that I appreciate it a bit more now than when I was, I guess, like a junior or senior in college and just fresh out of college. So, yeah, I think that was another piece that needed to happen was for folks to get a bit older and realize, oh, okay. This is a lot more relatable than I gave it on my first watch.
Yeah. Watching it through again, I had seen the first three seasons several years ago, and now I'm watching it through very slowly, like on purpose, very slowly, like one episode per day. I'm normally a binge watcher. This is in some ways painful, but it's given me, it's given me a lot of perspective. It's really interesting, I think, watching it in the now times. It's interesting watching it after a few months ago. There was shockingly insightful himbo discourse on Twitter, which I had expected to turn into just like a pile of people shouting at each other that their opinions were wrong. But because Twitter started talking about himbos, the piece that came out of it where I was like, actually, that's great, was this. So if a bimbo is a stereotypically reduced female character that's been like filtered through the male gaze, and is like reduced down to being like kind of ornamental, which, you know, is toxic and insulting because it says that all that men are looking for is like a ornament. but if that's true of what a bimbo is, then a himbo is a stereotype that's been broken down through the female gaze. So what does that mean? That means someone who is, you know, beefcakey, but also loyal seems to be like a core part of... Anyway, the point is Bolin is the platonic ideal of a himbo. Other solid himbo examples would be like Kronk out of Emperor's New Groove. There's some degree of like idealized, like not necessarily non-sexual, but not particularly sexually threatening. Just like kind of objectifiable. And also this loyalty thing that is like, and like good-heartedness that's underneath it all.
Wow.
Anyway, himbo, yeah, himbo discourse.
Me, so I just learned something.
I'm scrolling through a bit. I wish I could cite my sources, but Twitter is terrible. That particular line of thought was not my line of thought, and I don't remember whose it was. However, searching himbo on Twitter has brought up pictures of Bolin multiple times so far. So,
wow. Very, very cool. I'm glad I learned something new today within that realm. That's magical. Look at that.
Yeah, especially since when you say a himbo through the female gaze, and so it operates a little bit different than the bimbo.
Yeah, it's not just a beefcakey man. It's like a beefcakey man who is fundamentally kind and loyal. Yeah.
That's something for me to cook on.
For sure. Very cool. Now, the other thing I like with the slow, methodical watching of Korra is that you're doing what we generally do with our pilgrimage is we try not to binge because of the binge fatigue, and we're able to pick up on those minute details, those things that you would have not really seen if you do binge it, and that's really fun. I think one thing that I really enjoyed was when I was rewatching ATLA and then watching Korra is the fact that they, the creative team were able to finally get their polar bear dog in, because in the pilot of Last Airbender, they had kind of like a very rough polar bear dog cub, and you know, and like on all the watches that I've done, I'd never really noticed it until this last one where it's like, oh wow, they actually were able to get this fully realized polar bear dog in Naga, and I was like, aww. Nice, that's very cool. those things are really nice for me when I'm able to, you know, pick those up. Yeah
that's, I think, sweet. The thing I picked up through the first two on my rewatch is just I feel the adults in Korra's life failed her. I don't know if I felt that way the first time, probably because I was younger and had no type of deep-seated ideas about mentoring / raising children. But I'm watching this time and I was like, you mean she was raised in a South Pole that only had like 50 igloos anyway? Then y'all further isolated her. Then y'all let her go to Airbender Island all by herself to fight the leader of an insurgent group.
Yeah, that's not going to foster like a healthy sense of self and community and relationship.
Right. Because initially, so here's the thing that's new for me. I initially thought that Korra wasn't spiritual because she had that more type of firebender go-getter personality. But how do you become in tune with a whole nother world where you haven't even become in tune with the world that you're living in?
Good point.
Because you were actively kept from interacting with that world.
I'm getting some Elsa from Frozen vibes here.
Man, when you talk Frozen, just side note, Frozen 2 should have been Frozen 1, and I was like so shocked by anti-colonial Disney movie.
Heck yes, anti-colonial Disney movie. What was... Oh, Angry Birds was shockingly anti-colonial.
Huh.
That was actually worth watching.
I did not watch that. All right. I'm going to have to add that to the list.
Neither did I.
Sneak in there. Yeah, I feel like all of the adults in Korra's life are like still processing their own stuff to the point where they can't even really see her. Like, I feel like Korra is a powerful figure for like all of the kids or teens or heck adults who feel like they're too much. Cause she, you know, literally comes in as a tiny child, like whirling multiple elements, like ready to rock, and is the opposite in some ways of like the Joseph Campbell reluctant hero. She's like, yeah, bring it. It's that, everyone else in her life is reluctant to let her bring it.
Yeah.
Ooh, when you say she's not reluctant, that's interesting too, because that might be another reason people don't realize they have beef. Like the weird thing about the Joseph Campbell hero's journey is it's made through observation, but it's so specific that when people follow that formula and sort of internalize that formula, they're sort of shaken by something that's different. So Korra jumping in the Republic City like that, very interesting to bring that concept in.
The thing about Joseph Campbell is that, like, his idea was that he was making a monomyth, right? This universal myth. And he did read a lot of stuff, but he couldn't, like, I don't think he had all accounted for, not to put too fine a point on it, but his own white imagination. He really made a white Western European monomyth. You know, little details like women are never really the hero. They're the quest object that, you know, personally rubbed me the wrong way, but also just like, it's very Western storytelling. And there's plenty of examples of things that buck the trend of reluctant hero who, you know, follows this very specific path. I do think that some of his big themes, like, you know, the cycle of life, death, life, like that holds water in a lot of contexts beyond just Western Europe. But I feel like a lot of the folklorists of forever, but especially sort of the folklorists who were trying to draw really broad strokes, sometimes the strokes were too broadly drawn.
Yeah. Even the whole idea of the monomyth is something I sort of reject.
Yeah.
That I think is kind of damaging, like one person to save us all. Mm-hmm. Where like drama can still be about one person and it not be one person.
Right. Who... It's, I mean, even in drama in terms of like you're making the form of a fictional thing doesn't need to be about the hero and the hero's journey. There's a Japanese form of storytelling called Kisho Tenketsu, which is worth looking up just to provide a counterpoint to like the storytelling that's basically from Greek drama that has been filtered through European civilization and therefore colonially out into the world. And Kisho Tenketsu, which like... each of those syllables stands for like a part of this storytelling, is like kind of a nice counterpoint because it's not based on conflict, which is like wild for the Western mind. I think I don't remember the direct translation, but the key is like, here's a scene. Sho is like, here's a continuation of the scene. Ten is like, whoop, here's a totally different scene. And Ketsu is a, here's how those two things are connected. And if you look at manga with that in mind, you will see it. It's like a juxtaposition based and like more of a like relational way to build story.
Likewise.
Oh, man. Yeah. I am definitely going to look into that.
But yeah, oh boy, the moment when we as a culture can realize that like an exceptional individual who is on a quest ordained by the gods is like not the only story, that'll be a good day.
Oh joy.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I've got Kisho Tenketsu pulled up.
Yeah,
I recently learned about kabuki play structure and all the different types of stories that use jōhaku, the pace. Because One Piece, the manga One Piece, their current arc, Ichiro Oda is writing using kabuki-style structure.
What? That's so cool.
Yes. And so I was like, huh, what is this storytelling method? And let me learn how they pace and break stuff up. And that's different also.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm also going to plug my favorite philosopher. Because what you're talking about in relation to story and it being very Western European, my favorite philosopher, or at least one of, other being Angela Davis, this one, Kwasi Wiredu, his whole claim to fame, and I feel like he should be more known, is through being Ghanaian and from Ghana, the core of his ethical philosophy is a lot of stuff that we consider to be human universals are actually cultural particulars, but we don't always recognize it because the Northern world colonized the rest of the world and therefore influenced their values.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's a mindset, which is like a, you know, it's a filter that we're seeing stuff through, but we haven't realized we're wearing the glasses.
Right.
Yeah. And so, Lou, actually, for the listeners who maybe have not caught us talk about, you know, Mr. Wyadu, tell them about the book that spring, you know, that's the wellspring of these cultural particulars versus universal norms and all of that.
So, Philosophy in African Culture was the first book he wrote dealing with the subject. And that one is, though, the language is very philosophy heavy, where, like, if you read philosophers, they go through a very long methodology of concerning their terms. The book I tell people to pick up is Cultural Universals and Particulars, an African Perspective. He, Kwasi Wiredu, is an Akan man of Ghana, so he goes through very specific examples between Akan culture and other cultures and breaks down things we consider to be human universals and show how this has misconstrued and not allowed cultures to meld for people to understand a certain way of being. Quick example I'll give is the difference between personhood and being a human. The words have very separate distinguishable meanings in the Akan language, where everyone who's born is a human, yes, but until you figure out how you are going to contribute to the larger society in the world, you are not a person. And so with that language being readily available, like, a more communal mindset is so built into the culture that it is part of their everyday language. So that sort of existentialist, individualist, egoist argument of ethics sort of is not observable by pointing the two words. And he goes through different examples like that. And it's like, yeah, maybe some of the stuff you thought was just human nature isn't human nature.
Oh my gosh, this is so deeply down my alley. I'm really excited to check this out. Cultural Universals and Particulars.
Yes. All right.
Awesome. I'm glad. Yeah, that's a good one. I know that you and I, Lou, have talked about it and had different conversations about it. So, you know, the more we can get it out to the peoples, I think the better the better we'll be serving our community of listeners. So let's see. With the last 10-ish minutes we've got left, do we want to cover anything else from just our fictional fandom world? And, well, you know.
Well, yeah. Just, I guess, a round table question. What has been your comfort fiction consumption during these times?
One piece of comfort fiction, because it's, like, extremely adorable and, like, gently queer, and I find delightful, is the Tea Dragon series by Katie somebody. It's the Tea Dragon Society, the Tea Dragon Festival. It's super adorable. They're little dragons that grow tea leaves on their backs and the people surrounding them, and they're, you know, they're children's graphic novels, but they're completely adorable. Also, Delicious in Dungeon, which is a manga about like D&D style adventurers that are super broke and go down into the dungeon to, you know, slay monsters and try to make money, but they don't really have money for food. So they also just, like, eat the monsters.
Oh, wow. That got kind of dark.
It is kind of dark, but it's like, they're all kind of like, there's a lot of delightful details with, like, aspects of traditional Japanese cooking, except it's like manticore or whatever. And it's kind of, it focuses on the particulars of them just, like, surviving and, like, having decent self-care in a dungeon environment. There's some meta plot, but, you know, it's delightful for the fantasy aspect and, like, the fake recipe aspect as well.
Right.
Got it. Okay. I think my comfort fictional consumption is also a bit of an amalgamation of things. Kipo was a piece of it.
Heroes on fire.
Definitely. So, yeah. And so Kifo was a piece. And, well, of course, you know, The Last Airbender. Since that was just like, that's a thing that I lean to that I revisit every year on my annual pilgrimage. So that was there. And also We Bear Bears. That's been super cute and just kind and gentle. And it's 11 minutes of fun beer shenanigans. And then Craig of the Creek. Another just super cute, great story. 11 Craig minutes.
Is that on? Awesomeness. Is that streaming anywhere?
HBO Max, your cable provider, or Cartoon Network. That's why I say HBO Max.
HBO Max is going to get me. That's going to be the one.
Craig of the Creek is the show I wish I had when I was young. I grew up a black suburbanite, and the creators are from New Jersey and Maryland. And so there's like a lot of similarities in my life that I just didn't see on any TV show growing up. When I look at Craig's family, and I'm just very there for that show also.
You're not the first person I've heard say that. I hope that having it now is retroactively healing in some way. Feeling seen.
I've just like told everybody I know. I've told my mom, you should watch the show Craig of the Creek. You would enjoy the show.
Yes, it's so great. It's lovable. And yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it. It is lovable.
Guess my comfort TV, there's like a couple of scales of comfort TV. The one is I find comfort because I watch this with other people, just because story, group experience, it keeps things social. So my girlfriend and I watch Bolivar, and we're still working our way through Avatar: The Last Airbender. And so the group experience is cool there. Our group, when we were watching Tower of God, that was a fun group experience.
Yeah.
Especially since people couldn't binge because one episode came out every week. So people were forced to speculate and converse. Don't know if you know, Anne, but I've talked to Wilson, or I've talked on the cast about this a few times. I was the kid in high school who like thrived on classroom conversation. So I would always get mad at the kid who read ahead, not because they were trying to brag by reading ahead, but because they would try to ruin the speculation part for the rest of the class by saying they knew. And I'm like, just because you read ahead and don't get to participate in this conversation doesn't mean you get to kill the speculation for some of us, because I think that's the part that sort of allows you to simulate reality and reveal things about character and whatnot. So when we get one a week, I'm very excited because it forces my friends to do that.
I think as an adult, I see a lot more value in the like slow consumption of media, even though I am a binger at heart. And I can almost guarantee that I was that asshole in high school. I have grown as a person. I have better social skills now. I have learned to like value things that are not smartness, like storytelling pacing and community conversation.
Right. My binge, though, so I just realized this last week or 2 weeks ago. My Netflix comfort watches is Netflix teen dramas that don't center the average white person. Like, I don't know, but like if I've had a very long week and I say, oh man, I just need to turn something on and watch it, I realize that I almost always scroll through Netflix and be like, oh, this teen drama seems interesting. So I've seen all of Atypical, all of the expanding universe of Ashley Garcia. I've seen both seasons of Trinkets. And it's just a thing, sex education. It's a thing I do that I didn't realize that I do until last week. Because Trinkets being a show about addiction and addiction coming from coping mechanisms, like somewhere in the middle of watching that, I was like, wait a minute, is this one of my coping mechanisms?
There could be less healthy coping mechanisms out there, but at least you have the meta awareness of it.
Right. And it was just happening and I didn't even realize it. So that was been a cool one to discover. And then lastly, I've been reading the obscure manga, Batuki, because I am a practitioner of capoeira. And so there is a manga centered around the art, and it's centered around developing a style of capoeira specifically for combat, which I find fascinating.
Because
capoeira is about more than combat, so I've just enjoyed reading that.
Honestly, the martial arts part of Avatar is one of my favorite parts of it. Batuki sounds like it would be really interesting.
Yeah. So those things have helped keep me sane, and that's been my comfort. Watches. Reads.
Nice.
Yay, sanity.
Dope, yes. Awesome, awesome. And we will drop the names and links, if we have them, for those comfort watches / reads in the show notes. So if you all want to get in there, you guys can get in there and consume yourself.
Consuming yourself, the number one pandemic activity.
Yeah. Anything else we got to close?
No, I think that's it. We'll just have Anne drop her social media info, you know, website, things like that, where people can find her, find the content that she distributes, and then we'll hit the sign off.
All right. You can find Emerald Comics Distro at Emerald Distro on Twitter, because character limits, and then at Emerald Comics Distro on Instagram. Also, emeraldcomicsdistro.com is the website, web store. I have a lot of stuff up there. I would be lying if I said it was completely up to date, but there's a lot of good stuff. and then if you want to follow my infrequent tweets, you can find me at AnneBeanTweets. That's AnneBean tweets. Or you can follow my dog on Instagram. He's at Turbo Mayor of Good Boy Town.
Nice. Very cool. All right. So listeners, you know, you can always reach us at PoYiffPod on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can find us on our website also, www.poyiff.com. You can find me at Word to Wilson on Twitter, and you can find my fantabulous co-host
at Shens de Griot. That's underscore between Shens and the. And after you type that much, I'm like the only Twitter handle that begins that way. Follow me. Sweet. I be tweeting about story stuff. Just had an article and panel by panel, the comics magazine. So check that out too if you get a chance. Issue 38, Bitterroot. Yeah.
Nice. Yes.
It was a great article, y'all. And the entire issue was fantastic. So do pick that up panel by panel. You know, it's going to be panel and then X panel. And it's only a $3 pickup. So, you know.
For over 100 pages of content.
Yeah. So get in that. And yeah, well, that's all we have. It was fantastic as always chatting with you, and you know, it's always a joy when you're able to bless our mics.
I appreciate that y'all had me on and that you remember that I exist and that I got to in some small way celebrate 3 years of Emerald Comics Distro.
Yeah.
Yay. Cheers. So listeners, be kind to yourself and each others, and share a story you love with somebody you love.
And if you're standing alone in the fire, you're not alone. The future is hanging on a wire. But we're heroes on fire.
Peace.